Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of The Dark Hustle. Thank you so much for listening to my podcast and subscribing and following us. It's super cool. You guys are the best. Also, if you are not a member of our Patreon, what are you doing? Go check it out. It's got multiple levels to choose from, and we have early access over there for all of our episodes and a bunch of other stuff. So go check us out on
Hello.
Hi, is this Clara?
Yeah.
Brianna?
Hey, it's Brianna.
First of all, thank you for waiting on me, and thank you for doing this.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I just was saying I'm excited about this.
Okay, so little just random backstory, because horse people were all weird, and I friend people with horses, even if I don't know them, and I happened to run across your profile, and I ended up putting two and two together, because you're riding at Jen Palmer's place, right?
Yes. Yep, I just started
kind of training.
Yes. Yeah, so
okay.
I'm partnered with them of bringing in training horses. And so then we're going to work on getting some more training horses in, and then Jenna and I will work together on training them as well.
So let me just ask you a little bit about your history in the horse world. Did you grow up around horses, or did you just, was your family around horses?
Yeah, so I was a little girl who fell in love with horses. My family, my parents are not really horse people. They love them now. I'm into that, but yeah, it was just, I fell in love with horses and read every book and watched every horse movie I could find, and there were ponies down the road, and so I'd go play with the ponies and try to figure out how to train them, even though I had no idea what I was doing. So yeah, I didn't grow up with it. My parents for birthdays started to get me some riding lessons, you know, just to see. Parents always kind of want to see how much their kid is really into it, because the horse bug either sticks or it doesn't. And so they're kind of waiting to see if it stuck or not. And yeah, we kind of went from there.
Well, how fun is that? So when did you actually start riding and when did you actually start training versus just riding?
Yeah. So training, the job that I had in high school, I was working at the ranch of a kids camp teaching kids how to ride. And so it was a little bit of, we had to keep the horses tuned up. So that was kind of, I didn't know exactly what I was doing, but it's kind of the first step into thinking that direction. So I knew I wanted to go to college for that. I wanted to do that for the rest of my life. And so I went to Asbury University in Central Kentucky, and that's where I really started to learn training. I went through all the training program classes multiple times, and Jesse Westfall is the trainer down there. So he drives down from Ohio to Kentucky every week to teach classes, and so I tried to learn everything that I could from him there.
Oh, wow. Now, that's funny that, okay, so I didn't know they actually had classes in college to teach you horse training.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of an interesting thought. But when I was looking, cause I was like, I really want to do this. My dad was like, okay, you're going to go to college for it. And so we Googled top equine program schools in the U.S. and went and visited a bunch of them. And some of them it's more geared towards showing, and then you're taking like management and science classes, but then Barry and like Findlay University here in Ohio, they actually have training programs that they're teaching you to train.
So, all right, so let me ask you this. If obviously being out of college now and having had that experience versus like what you see people that offer natural horsemanship training and those types of people and programs that never go to college, do you think they collide? Are they really parallel with each other, or do you think college is in a different world?
I think it's just a different way to get to a similar end result, a similar career path. So growing up in Minnesota, The equine industry is there, but I always say you have to look a little harder for it compared to Kentucky, which is all the racing and dressage, cross country, some of the gated breeds, and then Ohio, where I live now, which is definitely more training, ranch riding, that sort of thing, definitely more quarter horses. And so I just didn't know, being in Minnesota and not growing up taking lessons in any specific discipline. I did not show growing up. It was more just kind of the typical learning how to ride. And so I just didn't know what was out there. I wanted to train horses because I've always been fascinated by understanding their minds and their and how we see that in their body language and just the way that they think. And so I knew I wanted to go that direction, but I had no idea what trainers were out there, what the different disciplines were. And so because of that, college seemed like a better choice just for finding options and broadening my horizons to see which direction I wanted to go. I think there's a lot of people out there, you know, if they grow up a little bit more around horses or in a specific discipline, then they tend to know more of the trainers and have more an idea of which direction they're wanting to go with that. And so then there's always the path of going and working for a trainer for several years until you to learn and to start building your own clientele. And then as far as, you know, some of the natural horsemanship routes, I think that's there's multiple routes that people go there as well. So it depends on the person. You really can be as creative as you want with that, which is the challenge, but also the beauty of it. But the traditional route, you know, is going, learning how to train horses from a trainer. I would say the college route is a little bit newer of a way to go about that.
Now let me ask you this. Did you feel like the college courses prepared you for the actual horse industry, or do you think they were a little more not as specific to what, or maybe certain aspects of the horse industry that it's missing that you weren't prepared for?
I think it gave me a really well-rounded knowledge base to build off of. I love to learn, and so I don't just want to know about training the horses. I want to know how they physically work, their biology. I want to know.
So it wasn't just training. You learned like hippology, horse bowl judging. You heard all. You learned all that kind of stuff.
Yes. So my actual major, I did a double concentration in the equine of science and management. And then I did all the train, pretty much all the training courses. And then I minored in business admin. And so that it actually, I mean, it paired up perfectly for the direction that I'm going in life. And so like the science, I thought that was super fascinating because, again, I just like to know how everything works. And so having that science, and there in central Kentucky around Lexington, there's Haggard and Rudin Riddle Veterinary and Equine Hospitals. And so there's a huge, huge concentration of science and research there. And so starting out, I actually worked for a vet. I worked for the Rudin Riddle Pharmacy. Having that science background from my degree gave me the lens to be able to see what they were doing and the language to be able to speak with them and understand what they're talking about. The farm, I helped with management and the general upkeep and care of the horses while I was there. And so all of that, then that prepared me down the road for managing the veterinarian's farm and helping with the foals and mares that he had there. And so, and then that just gives me extra knowledge for, I have connections. I can help manage other people's horses. I know how to take care of them well because training can only do so much. You also have to take care of their body physically. And so being able to pair kind of all of that together, allowed me to have a very well-rounded approach to my training, but has also gotten me far in the animal health industry.
Yeah, that is a little different perspective that not a lot of, you are correct. A lot of people don't consider the veterinary side of it, not in the intents and purposes of being a veterinarian, but just the care and the depth of the information that, you know, their bodies and all of them. I think that probably puts you a couple of steps ahead of everybody else knowing that, because some people don't care about that.
Yeah, and that's one of my things, is I want to help bring awareness to that in the training. There's just so many things that most people aren't necessarily aware of, and it's not because they don't want to learn and they don't want to take care of their horses, but it's just not something that would necessarily cross their mind of maybe this behavioral issue. Sometimes it is behavioral. Sometimes it's related to something physically. And so let's look at the whole picture here, because if we don't have the foundation and the building blocks of the horse physically being functional, it's going to take away and detract from what we're able to do with training.
You are right, because like back in the day, a lot of people chalked up, like, here's a perfect example. My mare was really funny about a particular pad. It was so weird. If you put a wool pad on her, it's like it itched her, and she'd buck you off. She did not like it. She would kick at it, crow kick constantly. If you took that off and put our regular pad, the pads that we used, not a problem, not a lick in the world, not a nothing. And so, you know, sometimes people would look at that like, okay, well, if they're kicking, oh, well, they're just being a brat. That's a behavior problem. You just need to put them in your plate. Like, so many horse people are all trying to be dominant, you know, just, oh, they just need to not do this and not do that, instead of thinking kind of outside of the box, like, okay, well, what they're trying to tell us something. Or even, you know, when you see people breaking horses, or they get a new saddle, or they get this or that, and all of a sudden their horse starts laying down on them, or their horse starts rearing, or their horse starts doing this. Well, no, maybe they're not being a brat. Maybe they're telling you something's hurting.
Right. Yeah. Let's look at the pattern of behavior, because horses are very, very rhythmic creatures. They do very much look for patterns and create habits. And so, yeah, so it's like, if it's the 2-year-old out in the pasture, and they come in and they're kind of running and bucking around, I expect that. They're a baby. They have tons of energy.
Right.
And there are ways, you know, the way that I start colts, there's not going to be bucking in that process, because I'm training their mind to prepare them for that on the ground, for when I actually get on and ride for the first time. It's just an easy, it's just another day for them in training. But yeah.
Well, some people are still old school. I mean, some people are still very old school, like just throw a saddle on them and let them buck it out.
Yeah.
And that works. You know, some of that still actually, you know, works, because I do hear a lot of people say what you just said. I don't have to worry about that when I'm breaking them. And my thought process is, okay, well, I hear you. I get that. And I believe that. But there are also other ways to do it that people still do it to this day. So I think it's, you know, you got to appreciate the different ways that people are able to get things done, especially in the horse world.
Yeah, for sure. And I look at it as like that, again, like these things, it's patterns of behavior, right? That's going to show what their brain is thinking. And so for me, when I train, I don't want bucking to be a patterned behavior that is in their brain. If they, when they're out in the pasture going and playing and bucking, that's natural for a horse. But I don't want that to be a habit that they have of, the person gets on, I'm going to buck it out a little bit. I don't necessarily want to deal with that. Most people don't want to ride through that. So if I can train, which I can train, a different thought pattern and behavior and way of thinking and processing for the horse, that's what the direction I'm going to go to set them up for the future. But yeah, like you said, there are a lot of different approaches that people take for this stuff, for sure.
Now let me ask you this. Do you do show, right? Or you just stick to training?
Yep. I do show. I've got my mare. She's reining bred. I've trained her in Western Dressage and Liberty and Bridalist and now reining. And so this was our second year getting her in the show pen and really starting to figure out the pieces. So I'm excited next year we'll have things a little more solidified.
How cool is that? Now, which discipline do you like the most?
I love the reining the best. I love it so much because it's such a wide range. And what I mean by that is we train our horses to such a high level and to understand the full spectrum of responsiveness and physical, mental, and emotional control. And so because we're going in there, we expect that horse to walk quietly into that pen and be fully keyed into listening to us. And then we're doing the extreme of lateral movement, which is a spin, right? And then we're asking them to run fast circles and run fast in their rundowns, and then to slow down into a small circle or to go into a sliding stop and either back up or roll back 180 degrees. And so I find it fascinating just for how to get those results in a way where the horse is processing about it. Like, how are we getting them to think about this, and how are we working with their brain to then find these physical results? And I mean, they're some of the calmest horses I've ever been around. They're the best behaved. And I love just that challenge of taking them to the high range of speed and athletic ability and still being able to bring them down, and they understand that. You know, so many horses, they're kind of, they stay inside their comfort zone a little bit, which is the same with mm-hmm. us as people, right? Stepping out of our comfort zone can be a little stressful, but the more that we step outside of our comfort zones, the more we're able to, if you know what I mean. And the more
You have you seen that meme or that video where it's the little mini in the blanket and there's the winner like outside the barn and he does this huge, like, I don't want to call it a hissy fit, it's more like an anxiety, like exactly what you're talking about. He's trying to jump out of the barn into the snow, and it's such a big deal, but it's really like something little. And that's
right.
What made me think about with what you're saying in comfort zone, because you're right, as people we're like, no, we don't want to do that.
Yeah, staying within that, and a lot of times we keep our horses in that too, and I think it's so important to stretch our horses and teach them how to step outside of that and grow their comfort zones, because it just prepares them for anything that we might come across in life, whether it's in the show pen or it's out on the trail, hanging out with friends, in the barn, changes in weather, because you know, we've all seen the horses that they'll start to get kind of up and excited, and then they don't really know how to come down from that. And so they're just kind of always on edge. And I want to be able to teach them that things are going to come along in life. Same with us people. Things are going to come along that are going to be stressful and push us outside of our comfort zone. But here's how to work through that and come back down from that. And that just, it creates such a well-adjusted horse.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's like, what was it I was talking to somebody? It's the same thing with trainers. You know, you'll see a lot of people think, like, I hate to say cowboy, but cowboy, what you initially think is a cowboy, your Western guy.
Uh-huh.
It's good for them to do something like dressage or hunt seat or something of that nature, because it'll keep you fresh. And the more well-rounded you are when it comes to riding horses, the more you're able to do multiple disciplines at a better level.
Yeah. And I, you know, with, as I mentioned, I've done Western dressage and Liberty and reining with my mare. And what is so cool about that from the training side of things is just what you're saying, like across disciplines, find the threads of theory that are the same. And so it sounds kind of crazy, but because it's two different ends of the spectrum, but dressage and reining have a lot of similar theories. And it looks, in my brain, it kind of looks like on this big spectrum, it's a sandwich of just dressage operates kind of in the middle range, and then reining is on either end of that. And it's just fascinating to me. Obviously, when you get to the higher levels, the training is going to diverge because you need to be able to ask for specific movements in a specific frame, and that is very different between dressage and reining as far as the frame. But the theories and the concepts are all very similar and tie back and forth. So it's been super fun taking her from the Western dressage to reining and being able to adjust those theories one way or the other depending on what I'm needing. And I know someday, you know, reining is a really physically challenging sport. And so it's not going to be long-term for a lot of older horses. So I know that once she gets a little older, I'll probably adjust her back to Western dressage, but it's not going to be a huge change because all of the theories and the foundations are there. So I love that, going across disciplines.
Yeah.
And what ties together here.
And it may, and the Western dressage and cowboy dressage, which I just learned about, they kind of collide together. It's not as strenuous on their bodies as the reining is. You know, we actually did an order of some shirts for this girl who specifically said, it's funny that you brought this up. We did some embroidered cinch shirts for her for a Western, keep saying Western, but cowboy dressage, because they are two different things.
Okay.
You have cowboy dressage, yeah, and then you have Western. And her horse was a high performance horse they bought her to use for their daughter, who now is kind of slowing down a little bit and showing her in the cowboy dressage. So it's cool to find them another job after maybe their initial heightened of their career. So
and it's like, you know, horses and humans, we never stop learning through life, and the more you're willing to learn and take like a learning mindset and teach your horses to have a learning mindset, the more you can morph from one thing into the other, right? And expand the edges of that comfort zone.
Now I'm stalking all your pictures now. So it looks like you do, it looks like you do clinics, right?
Yes. So I do training horses, I do lessons, and I'll do clinics. And so, like, my lessons, I teach people to train their own horses. And that's with those clinics, teaching people how to train their own horses, because most of us get into the horses because we want to spend time with our horses. We want to understand them. We want to go try new things with them. And so many people think that, oh, well, I can't do a lot of these things because I'm not a trainer. But the reality is, our horses are always learning, whether we realize it or not. And so whether or not we put on that metaphorical hat of I'm the trainer, we are teaching our horses different things. And so I like to help build that confidence in people on, here's how to communicate with your horse. Here is what they are thinking and how they're thinking. And here's how we can influence that to train them and really give them that confidence to move forward in that and be able to realize how much more they can do with their horses.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I think it's great to see people do these clinics because it used to not be a thing. You know, it was so hard to try to like find any type of guidance or instruction on what to do with horses. And so, you know, obviously the more you know, the better it is. And do you do those just periodically on the whim, or do you have like a schedule of them, or do you have one coming up soon?
So I do not have any on the schedule right now. It's kind of,
well, it is going to be winter.
Yeah. Right. So it depends on, you know, how much people want to bundle up and spend a day out in the barn.
No, we ain't doing that.
So it's a little bit of by request and reaching out to people to kind of build a group in an area who would be interested in that. So with clinics and with lessons, I travel to people because, again, that's another issue is sometimes people don't have the transportation to get their horse to a weekly lesson or take it to a trainer. And so I will come to them and So obviously with clinics, if there's more people in the surrounding area who want to come, they'll need to haul in. But kind of finding landing places that I can base out of that's easy for people to come to. I want to make this accessible to people.
Yeah. Now, were you born and raised in Ohio?
No. So I'm from Minnesota originally, and then went to Kentucky for college, lived there a couple years, and then moved up here to Ohio about 2.5 years ago.
It's a lot of horse people in Ohio, though.
Yeah, it is. It, you don't really think about it, but it's very much like the quarter horse side of the world and the Western performance. And that's probably based around, we have the quarter horse
Congress. Yeah.
And yeah, so it's really, you know, most people don't think about it being in Ohio, but it actually is pretty big here. There's tons of reining. We actually have a bunch of new shows that have started up here in the last year or two. And so you can go to a reining show every single weekend through the show season if you want.
That's crazy because, you know, it's I've talked about this a couple of times already. You know, a lot of people migrate to Texas and Oklahoma because that's like the
yeah.
heart of all high performance horse, all of it. You know, you've got roping there, barrels there, reining, cut, it's all there, right? And so that's the first
yeah.
place that people think of. But it's actually really impressive that Ohio has kept, not only kept Congress there, they've not moved Congress, they've kept Congress
mm-hmm.
there, and people just absolutely flock to come and do Congress. So that's a really, it's really impressive that they've done that for as long as they have.
Yeah, and they're, I know they're, you know, working to grow it and to bring attention to the different disciplines that are included in that. And yeah, it's just, it's massive, really.
Yeah, it's, I actually ran across a TikTok like the other day. They were doing something funny, and I thought it was hilarious. They were like rating the stall displays where people, you know, dress up their stall, the barn fronts or whatever. And I mean, that's a big deal there. Like that's the only place I think of is Congress that like lets people do. I'm sure they do it at other places too, but it's a bigger deal at Congress. Like they go all out. This one place looks like a modern day townhouse. It was gorgeous.
It really
was
does.
Like, holy cow.
People take it very seriously. It's a big thing.
They do. I wonder if it's a competition with it or not. I'm going to have to look that up if it's a competition in regards to the...
They really
do you know
be.
If it is?
Yeah, I don't know. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, because, I mean, just there would be no other reason why people would spend that kind of money on that just for looks. But, I mean, I'm...
Comfort of home again.
Yeah, exactly. So now back to you loving reining. Have you kind of dabbled in or are you curious into the whole ranch world, the whole ranch idea? Because, you know, that's obviously been a very big, big thing that's up and coming. It's still growing. A lot of people love it. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think, I mean, the Western performance discipline, they all tie together and you can cross back and forth, I think, fairly well. And so the ranch riding, I have not personally done it. I know a ton of people who have, and I'd be interested in doing some of it. But I think we see a lot of crossover, you know, because there's the classes of ranch reining within, there's ranch roping. And so I feel like it pulls from a lot of the different Western disciplines, which I think is such a cool place to go to be able to experience and try a lot of those different things. So yeah, I know it's really popular. People really like it. And when they're kind of wanting to try different things, I know a lot of people go to that ranch riding.
But your type of training, like your type of foundational, just breaking, you know, getting a horse ready to go on to their forever home, that's pretty much what you do. That, you know, if somebody was to put a horse through your program, they would be able to take that horse and go off to do just about any other discipline, correct?
Yes. Yep. They could go, they could do reining, they could do ranch riding, they could do Western dressage, you know, teaching the idea. And again, when I'm training these horses, I'm then also going to be giving lessons to the owners because
I want them on the same page, because that's going to build the most successful partnership. When the owner actually understands why the horse is doing what they're doing and how to ask for that and the function and the theory behind that. And so then from there, with that foundation for both the horse and the rider, then that's where, yes, they're able to go and kind of go into these different disciplines. And the horses, I teach my horses to have a learning mindset. And so they're going to understand how to learn new things and have that back and forth training conversation. And so then if they want to take these horses into different disciplines and learn more about them, the horses are going to be able to adjust well. Yeah, because I don't think a lot of people, the general public, just kind of looks at like certain disciplines and goes, okay, well, the horse can just, we're going to send them to somebody that specifies in this, without thinking about the initial step of a good foundation prior to the horse being taken to a specific discipline, you know?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people just think, they just think, because you just don't know, you know, if you've not been around it, you just don't know. And a lot of people just still look at a reining horse and go, okay, well, we're just going to buy a horse and send them to a reining trainer. Okay, well, no, we need to make sure that we've got this horse with their good, you know, kind of like humans in school, you know, middle school and high school. Okay, now you graduated high school. Now you got the basics of life. Now it's time to go to your specified college.
Yeah, and it actually, it's super helpful to think of training horses as school levels. And that's what one of my mentors, Stacey Westfall, she talks about the training levels through the lens of human school levels. So, you know, a green horse, you're just getting started there in elementary school. And then as they start to learn.
Did you say Stacey Westfall?
Yes.
I have been a fan of hers. I'm sorry. I just didn't hear that name until now. I've been a fan of hers for years. Her freestyle reining bareback.
Yep.
The one for her dad. I always watch that video and cry. I can't not watch it and not cry.
I know. That is actually what I first saw of hers. And so it's her husband, Jesse, who goes down to teach at Asbury University, where I went to school. And that's the reason why I went to Asbury, is I had no idea what reining was growing up in Minnesota. I'd never heard of it. I didn't know what it was, but I had always dreamed of riding bareback and bridleless. And I saw that video and I was like, that's cool. That A, she's bareback and bridleless. B, this spinning and sliding stop thing is really awesome. And
yeah, she handled that. Like, that's a badass video. Her, that whole ride is insane.
It's beautiful. And, getting to learn how that way of thinking to be able to train a horse like that is just fascinating. And so that's why
I think that horse was a stud. Do you know
that? Yes. Yeah, so that it was a mare. Her barn name's Roxy. Yep, and that, so my mare is one of her granddaughters, and I hear Stacy talk about her relationship with that mare, and it's just incredible, and what she was able to accomplish.
Yeah, you're right, it was a mare, and I think, didn't you just say it was a special mare, though? Hold on, I'm trying to find an article on it. There was like an article on it, and it talked about the horse. I can't find it.
Yeah, I know. She probably, I think she has on Stacey's
Roxy.
Website. Yep, Roxy.
Yeah, that's the name of that horse.
Mm-hmm. Super, super amazing ride.
That's insane talent, Mike, just to be able to, like what you said, bridleless and bareback on a reiner. Oh, my gosh.
You set a new precedent in the reining world.
Yeah, well, for anybody that's ridden, I mean, you've got people that have been riding their whole lives and still couldn't possibly do that, you know, so.
Yeah.
So where do you, so you originally, when you first went out on your own, I'm assuming, did you kind of go out on your own to work for yourself and provide training and all that stuff straight out of college, or did you kind of work with somebody until you took that step?
So kind of both. I went the direction of starting out my own business right away. And at, you know, as I'm growing and learning more, I can teach and offer more, right? And so starting out after college, it was starting training a couple horses, coaching a couple students on training their own horses. And it's mostly the basic foundational training, groundwork, riding, general horsemanship. And so I kind of, that has grown with my learning. And so I continue, Jesse and Stacy have been incredible mentors. I'm so thankful for them. And so through college and after college, I've continued to learn from them, and I'm still learning from them, training horses to a higher and higher level, and that understanding, and also just learning how to build this business, learning how to coach people and be able to relate these concepts to people. And so that I always want to be learning, because the more that I learn, the more that I can help other people and offer to other people. So it is a little bit of both. It's not necessarily, I didn't take the route of going and working for a trainer for multiple years. It was starting out on my own, but continuing to have these relationships to where I keep learning and keep growing. So I don't just stagnate in that.
I think that's what's so kind of refreshing about the horse industry in its entirety for everybody, is that, you know, you're dealing with another living, breathing thing.
Yeah.
And so it's always like there's not a stopping point of what you can learn. Every trainer has a couple of guys on their phone that they can call that does this and does that, you know, that'll help you. Because, I mean, you just can't, it's impossible to know everything that can and cannot happen with a horse when it comes to training it. And it's just one of those industries where you have to network, or you're not going to make it.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, every horse is going to be different. And so you're going to learn different things from them. And you're also going to have to figure out different ways to relate the same concept to a different horse. And so that's what I've loved being at these reining shows. It's so fun to watch and listen to these different trainers, and they'll kind of swap ideas and training techniques on different horses. And so I go to these shows, and I started out actually working as a judge's scribe for reining shows. And so I got to learn the sport a little bit inside out and know what they're looking for. But it's a lot of these judges are trainers. And so just asking questions of everybody, how did you get where you did? How would you approach training this concept? And just talking and learning and always being able and willing to ask questions and admitting, I don't know how to do this, you know. And it's all these trainers all the way up. There's new horses. There's always going to be new ways to go about these things. And so watching and listening to them swap ideas has been super helpful.
Yeah, I can only imagine. It's because back in the day, I don't think I've actually talked about this before. I don't think a lot of people in this generation of horses realize how amazing. Well, hold on. It's a catch-22, but the information that is available to them was not what it used to be. It was so hard to kind of, I mean, clinics didn't even start coming around until the 90s. So, early 2000s. So it's cool that so much information is available for people to look up and see, and you can get so many different opinions and views from various different people that still get the same result when it comes to horses. I think that's awesome. What do you think about social media and horse training? I know that that's a big thing with a lot of people. It can get very, one, it can hold a lot of misinformation that you want to try to correct, but two, it can also be challenging for you guys to have to deal with people that, I guess, pass judgment real quickly, or just don't really know, or hard to kind of teach. You know, what do you think about that as far as social media and horse training?
Yeah, so honestly, that's social media, I'm just kind of getting into putting more out there so that people can know what I do in my business and how I train. But it's intimidating, you know, and everyone thinks they are right, and it's easy to hide behind a keyboard. I think more people need to approach each other with grace and kindness just across the board. But with the training, everybody, again, because there's so many different ideas and ways of doing things out there, I want to be able to keep things in open discussion. There are going to be people who maybe don't like the way that I do things. And we see that, you know, across the board, you're going to have people who comment on trainers' posts and say, well, that's wrong, or that's cruel, or whatever it is. But I don't want to encourage that kind of attacking way of speaking to each other, but it's also like, okay, let's have a discussion. And instead, like, ask questions and why do they do that way? And what is behind that? Because it's so hard, you know, putting content out there on social media, you really just see the results in what they're doing. And until you understand the reasoning behind it and how they're actually doing it, it's, you really only have a fraction of the picture, right? And so those sort of people, I also look at it for my business of, it's okay if you don't believe in what I'm doing. There are going to be people that I am the right fit for as a trainer and a coach, and there's going to be people that I'm not the right fit for. And you want it to be the best relationship for all parties involved, for the owner, the horse, and the trainer, for it to work well. And so those people, like, I'm happy to have discussions around those things. But I also understand that I might not be the best fit for you, and that is okay. So I'm not going to get super offended about that. I'm not going to try to argue my points, but I do want to educate, and I want to put out there an explanation of what I am doing. But again, the people who really are curious about that and want to learn more are going to be the people who reach out to have those discussions. So that's, it's kind of, I just want to approach people with respect and kindness and be willing to have discussions, but it is very hard to navigate and hard not to take personally when people do say those kinds of things.
Yeah, it can be easy to do that, you know, because they just, you know, some people just don't know, you know.
Exactly.
Especially, I know the Rainers were getting kind of dug in the dirt with the whole head being low, and it's like, okay, well, you know, they've been doing that for a really long time. It's just, it's how the horse has to move in order to produce what you see.
Yes, that's
mechanically it has to do that.
Yeah, and that is such a great example of, you know, let's look at horses. How are these horses moving naturally versus what is created? And if you look, a lot of these reining horses, watch them out in the pasture, a lot of them like to go around with their head and neck low. It's how they've been bred physically. And looking at, okay, well, what does that mean for collection? Again, this is where I find it so fascinating, you know, the tie between different disciplines because of the theories. But with our kind of reigning Western version of collection, we're taking the collection and it's more forward, whereas in dressage, they're just rotating that and bringing the haunches under more. And so that's where people get confused by the look of it rather than understanding how it actually works. And I find all that stuff really fascinating.
Yeah, because, well, I mean, you know, I hate to say this, but most people just don't care enough to learn. And so I've read a quote where people will actually just commit to being wrong because it's lazier than what it would take to learn what is correct and what is right. So, you know, I mean, at that point, you just have to walk away. But it can be frustrating, I'm sure, because that'll put a dip in, like, trying to grow the industry as a whole. It's hard to grow something with people that's already secluded in itself. I think only 1.2 million people own horses in the United States, and it's like 334 million people in the whole country. So, you know, we're already a secluded industry. So it's hard to grow it when you're trying to teach people outside of it through a platform that's kind of the only way to grow it, you know?
Right. Yes, it's a catch-22 anymore of, you know, I started putting more on social media because I'm like, I feel like that's what, for visibility's sake, that's kind of my training resume, you know, so to speak, so that people can see that I'm here. But really, and this is what I love about the equine industry, is it still is rooted in, I don't want to say not old-fashioned, but traditional ideas, and it really is word of mouth. And so, yes, I'm putting these things out there so that people have a place to go to get more of an idea of what I do, but also so much of the growth that I've seen in my business over the last couple years, it's been word of mouth and recommendations. And so that is what, you know, gives me hope for this industry, is it's going to be the people that you know talking to people that they know. And you're putting things on social media, yeah, there are going to be people who push back at that because they don't maybe understand or know what you're talking about or why you're doing it. But for growing a business, it really is going to be the people around you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's anything with life. I mean, if you surround yourself with losers, you're going to be a loser. If you surround yourself with winners, you'll be a winner. You know, it's all about who you surround yourself with. So, yeah, that's definitely true. Now, who I know you said Stacy Westfall was a mentor of yours. Are there others that you have kind of dealt with that have just kind of stuck with you and that have kind of helped push you in your career?
So there's always, you know, always finding people to inspire you and challenge you to learn more. So that Stacy and her husband, Jesse, is the one that I learned from at Asbury. And so he's a reining trainer and coach. He coaches people to train their own reining horses. And so the two of them have been really good sounding boards. And when I was doing Western dressage with my mare, I actually went and took lessons from a traditional dressage coach. And so I talked with her about both the training but also business, just asking, you know, how do I approach this? How do I reach people? What do I get involved in? And so it's finding people like that, looking for people who are doing at least similarly to what you want to do, and being willing to go up and ask, you know, ask for their advice and then take it and think about it and act on it. And then looking for people outside of the industry has been important for me as well, to have people to go to for business advice, because not only as a horse trainer do I have to know how to train horses, I also have to know how to run a business, and also finding other educators, because as a trainer, I also have to be a people person and know how to communicate and clearly. So, yeah, I've just kind of, as I've moved through life, and I've looked for people in my life, both in the equine industry and in my family and at my church, for just people to have as sounding boards who I have that relationship with, that they can speak into my life and they can, you know, call me out when I'm not making the smartest decision, and who can help educate me on that and open my eyes to better making a better decision or going a different direction, and who can, they all have different perspectives, so they're all going to provide a different way of thinking about the direction that I want to go. So yeah, I try to keep it's a small group of people that I trust and am open to speaking into my life. And I rely very heavily on them, but I like to keep it kind of varied so I get those different perspectives.
Now, you did Western dressage, not classical dressage?
Correct.
Okay. Yes. Well, I'm trying to figure out who is this doing dressage. I guess that's not you. Around English. You didn't do it in college?
Purple shirt?
Yes.
Okay.
She was just a purple shirt. That's my fault.
yes, that is me. That was a cool program through Asbury University. Part of the training program is they have a police mount training program. And so they bring in 6-month-old weanlings that then you're assigned to, so going through the training program, at the time that I was there, they didn't have much in the way of the Western performance program that they do have now that Jesse is building down there, and which I'm super excited to see where that goes. But the police mount training program was the primary way of learning how to start colts when I was there. So I went through that program.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, and so one of the things as around three-year-olds, sometimes we're the Asbury University Service Mounts Club is invited to Equine Affair. And so that was one of the years we were invited to Equine Affair and brought our three-year-olds up to do a demonstration to show, you know, the foundational training that we put on them and then how we train them to handle the lights and noises of police cars and crowds and pushing against obstacles, because that's really important for a police horse to be able to do. So, yes, yeah, so that was, we at that time mostly had English tack for our three-year-olds for events. And so, and we all wanted to, you know, look uniform as a team as we performed. So that's what that is from.
I don't think a lot of people, you just made me think about something. Police horses are massively desensitized. They would put, I would hate to say this, but they would kind of put show horses to shame when it comes to the desensitization. I probably said that wrong. Because I talked to a lady who does, she literally has training in the city of Philadelphia. And she's like, you've got fire trucks going on, ambulances, you've got all kinds of this stuff going on. I know for a fact my mare would flip out. So just the utter respect that I have gained for those horses in general over the last couple of years has just skyrocketed. Because, because you don't think about it, though. If you're showing or if you're even reining, you're doing all of that kind of stuff, you're just focused on that one discipline and what you deal with in those types of environments and those events. But these horses, they are dead broke.
Yes, and there's a reason why we tend to choose these draft crosses because, you know, draft horses, the way they think, it tends to be slower, calmer. Obviously, there's variation from horse to horse,
right?
But yeah, you think about the hotter blood horses, they're going to be the ones that are more on edge. They're a little bit more amped up and worried, and that's just the way their brains are wired. And so we want, for the police horses, they want a little bit of athletic ability, so they'll have drafts crossed typically with thoroughbreds is a lot of the colts and fillies that they brought into the Asbury program to be police horses. But that draft brain just gives them kind of that calm demeanor. They're like, okay, you know, they'll agree with what you're asking them to do, know how to feel. So that creates a really good horse to have as a police horse because they tend to be more unflappable.
I had no idea that that's what they use. You just taught me something because we also spoke to somebody who kind of did some police horses down in Florida, but they, I don't think they specifically chose draft crosses, but that makes a lot of sense what you're saying, that that is what they would choose for that. That never dawned on me until you just told me that.
Yeah, and you think of, like, Border Patrol, they tend to use a lot of Mustangs. And the reason for that, those are hardy horses that know how to watch where their feet are, and they're used to long days on rough terrain. And so that's, they tend to go a little bit more for those horses because they're going to hold up for the long days out on.
You know, I'm glad you just brought that up because a lot of people, probably more horse people do this than non-horse people, but we have a tendency to get kind of judgy about particular breeds and horses and things and stuff of that nature. And I'm really glad that you just said Mustangs are used for that because, you know, you could take some of these really high-dollar show horses and they wouldn't last a couple of hours out there with what those horses have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not degrading show horses in any way, shape, or form. It's just saying being able to have the respect for different breeds and different environments and different jobs. It's really refreshing to hear that. I've always
different form and function. And, you know, we breed our performances to be performance horses.
Right.
Which I believe in taking all my horses, you know, go to the show pen, but they also need to be able to go out and function on the trail because that's going to help so much with their fitness, and it helps their brains to be able, you know, there's random things that pop up out on the trail. That's going to help your horse be a more well-adjusted show horse. So I believe in the kind of cross-training, so to speak. But, yeah, we bred thoroughbreds to race. No wonder their brains think run, go forward all the time. They're bred to do that. We breed reining horses to stop. You watch a reining foal out in the field when they're running. When they go to stop, they tuck their little butts. They have no idea what they're doing. It's what they've been bred to do. And Mustangs, you know, they have survived out there tough life, and so they're going to be hardy. They're going to think, I really enjoyed the Mustangs that I rode when I worked at a guest ranch for a summer out in Colorado. I've never met a horse that has such awareness of where their feet are, and I really liked that, especially for riding out in the mountains. And, yeah, so it's just everything. We've bred them for different forms and purposes, and we can adjust that and use them cross-discipline and cross-job and function, but there's a reason why we go to these certain breeds for certain jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, pretty much. I mean, you know, I just think that maybe the Mustang should get a little bit more respect, you know, with what I was saying. That was kind of why I said that. Anyways, I think it's great what you're doing. It's exciting that you're doing it, and you're going to plan to stay there at Jen's for a while, right? Until you kind of move on to your own place, or you said you're working together?
Yep. Yeah. So kind of right now, I've bringing training horse, and so boards there at Jen and Matt's. And so now we're kind of working on some exciting new stuff of having training horses that then Jen and I are working on to be able to sell. So something to keep eyes open for, but we'll have some horses that we'll be training to sell, looking at next year.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of people make that switch from, or not necessarily switch, but providing some sales into your program really kind of helps, not only with marketing, but just being able to kind of put out. I know some people really enjoy and have started investing in their own kind of breeding program. So
that's been really big in the last couple of years. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, a lot of trainers end up doing that. They, or programs, they end up kind of adding a little bit in there with everything. Now, are you guys wanting to have events there too?
So that's something that we've talked about. So that is something that we might open up in the future, maybe offering some clinics and such. But at this time, we don't have that on the calendar yet.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Well, you never know what's going to happen. You never know what's going to happen. You know, I mean, sometimes you never know, you know. So that's good. Well, that's exciting what you guys have got going on there.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to see where it goes, and I'm super thankful to be partnered with them. They're really great people.
They train. Do they train too?
Jen does.
So you're working. So you can get them started, and she finishes them.
We'll both kind of be partnering back and forth, so we both start, and she's learning how to do reining as well. So, yeah, we both kind of will switch back and forth and take them further.
Oh, okay. I was just fixing to ask you, do you think it's better for the horse trainer to concentrate on kind of one level of the process, or is it better for them to be able to, because, you know, in these big barns where they have all these freaking horses and stuff, you've got certain people that do certain things, and then they move on to this person that does this thing, and da 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 da. But I would think it would be better to be able to do all of it, a little bit of all, you know, the jack of all trades.
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought it's kind of a better mindset than the other way, but sometimes it just depends.
Yeah, it depends really on what the person is wanting to do, what kind of clientele you're looking to have. So, yeah, there's some people that they want to just do the higher level stuff, or they just want to do colt starting, and then there are some that they just want to focus on one discipline, or they might focus on a few different ones. So it really, that's the fun part and also the challenging part about having a business as a trainer, is it really gets as creative as you want it to be. I mean, that's for a lot of businesses. If it's going to be as creative as you can think up. So just kind of different people enjoy different parts of the process. I enjoy the whole process, being able to put a good foundation on and put the pieces in place, you know, when I'm starting under saddle, that I'm going to pull out and use when I'm working on higher level stuff and create that connection all the way through. But I also know, like, just cold starting is super fun. So some people prefer to just do that, and that it's just as good as doing it all the way through. And so that's the cool part, is depending on what you like most about it, you really can build a business around that.
Yeah, I agree.